Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to talk to Ed Connors. Ed was one of the original owners of Gold's Gym. Not the original owner. The original owner, of course, was Joe Gold. And Joe sold it to Bud Danzig for a few years, and then Ken Sprague bought it from Bud Danzig. And Ken owned it when they filmed Pumping Iron, and then Ken got out of it, I believe, in the late 70s. Ed will confirm that when we do our interview. And then Ed Connors, along with Pete Kromkowski and Tim Kimber, bought the gym, and they moved it back to Venice, as he'll tell us in his interview. And then they started franchising it, and that's when Gold's Gym really took off, because up until that point, there was only one Gold's Gym. So an interesting also thing about Ed is he had three houses in California, and he would have house guests, as he called them. So he would find promising bodybuilders, and he would invite them out to California, and they could stay at his house for free and try to get their career going, try to get a contract going with somebody. He talked to a lot of guys who wanted to be professional wrestlers. A lot of upcoming bodybuilders like Jay Cutler and Lee Priest, Rich Gaspari. So Ed's got some great stories also about that. So we're going to talk to Ed in a minute. Really fascinating interview. I'm glad we had a chance to talk to him. Before we get to that, though, I really want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is FLAlternativeMeds.com. That's FLAlternativeMeds.com. And even though they're located out here in Florida, they will work with anybody in the continental United States. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. So what else is going on out there in the world, guys? A lot of good things happened this week. A bad thing, though, happened last Monday on the 13th, Joseph Gromulus, 1985 Mr. Universe in the light heavyweight class, he beat out Phil Williams that year. He passed away at the age of 59. I believe it was from a heart attack. So Joseph was from Germany, really thick, impressive bodybuilder. He took second to Rich Gaspari in 1984, and then he came back in 1985, and he won, and he was in amazing shape when he beat Phil Williams. Really, really ripped. And then he competed in the Mr. Olympia for a few years. I know 86 when it was in Columbus, Ohio, and 87 when it was in Gothenburg, Sweden. So Joseph was a really impressive bodybuilder. I don't know what he was doing over the years, but unfortunately Joseph passed away at age 59. So rest in peace, Joseph Gromulus, great bodybuilder. We'll always remember him. We had also a couple birthdays this last week. My good buddy Glenn Kinnear, who was the 1986 Mr. America and Mr. World winner. Glenn turned 61 this week. I can't believe it. I used to see Glenn when he was a teenager back in the 70s in Chicago. I looked up to Glenn. He was about 4 years older than me. And I used to see Glenn compete when he was a teenager, and he would win all the teenage shows. And he was a great bodybuilder, great abs, huge legs, especially for back in the late 70s, early 80s. And Glenn stuck with it, and he moved out to Arizona and opened up his own gym out there, Hoppy's Gym. And then finally achieved his dream. He won the 1986 AAU Mr. America overall title. So that was awesome. So happy birthday, Glenn. We also had Albert Beckles, the legendary Albert Beckles, had a birthday this week. And there was some controversy on social media, on Facebook, because everybody thought Albert was 90 years old. And you know, social media is once one person says something, then everybody believes it. And they just went down the line, happy 90th birthday, happy 90th birthday. So I believe Albert was really born, though, in 1938, not 1930. So that would make him 82 years old. And I talked to Joe Rourke. Remember Joe Rourke, the IFAB historian? He used to be in Flex magazine all the time. I contacted Joe on Facebook and I asked him, and he said he thought he was also born in 1938. Because I remember when they had ironage.us that Sean Kareen used to run back in the early 2000s, like 2002, 2003. And I was on that board all the time. This was before Facebook started and Twitter and Instagram. So there was really, if you went on the internet, the only place you could really communicate with people was the message boards on the different websites. And Iron Age was for the old time guys, the guys who like what we celebrate here on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So that's where I met Peter McGuff and Sean Kareen and a lot of old time guys on there. And Joe Rourke used to go on there, and we got into discussion about Albert Beckles' birthday. And we think that the reason why this whole thing started with his miscommunication with his age, I think it all started at the 84 Mr. Olympia when Wayne D'Amelio was promoting that show. And you know Wayne, he's a showman, the P.T. Barnum of bodybuilding. He always tries to get as much publicity as he can for his shows. And I think he was saying that Albert that year in 1984 was 54 years old because he just wanted to get more publicity going for Albert. I think Albert that year won the Pro Mr. World contest in February. And he was really good at the Olympia that year. He was, what was he, fourth or fifth? I think he was fifth. And then he won a pro show right after that, right after the Mr. Olympia that year. So he was in outstanding shape. And, of course, everybody was freaking out because he was 54. And Albert came out on the stage dancing like he always does. But, yeah, I think the real age was 82. And then I looked at some old Ironman reports online. And I think it was from maybe the 1970 Mr. Universe, the NABBA Mr. Universe, or 71. I can't remember which one. I think it was 70. And I found the check-in cards where everybody checks in and they have the person's age and their weight, and they even had everybody's measurements, like their arm measurement, their chest measurement, their leg measurement. So it was really cool. And I saw Albert's age on there, and his age then would have made him 82. So I'm pretty sure he's 82 years old. What was funny was people were emailing me and they were saying, well, on Wikipedia, it says that Albert was on your podcast and he said that he was born in 1930, which is untrue, because if you heard our interview with Albert last year, the first question I asked him was what his age was. And he said he was born in 1936. So he did not say 1930, but I'm pretty sure it was 1938. Albert may not remember his exact age, but he was either born in 1936 or 1938, but he was not born in 1930. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, I did a segment on RX Muscle this last week. And we did it about the AAU Mr. America. So Dave Palumbo, the host, he wanted me to pick four Mr. America winners and talk about them. Of course, we couldn't talk about every Mr. America winner. So I picked Steve Reeves, who won the Mr. America in 1947. And then we talked about 1977, which Dave Johns won that year. But I just wanted to talk about 77 because that was the year they had the parade down Santa Monica. And it was really, really a huge event. Then we also talked about 1981 when Tim Belknap won, and I talked about seeing Tim Belknap compete out in Chicago when I lived out there. And then we talked, of course, about Jeff King, who was one of the most popular Mr. America winners ever. Jeff won in 1983, and he had those huge legs and that great upper body, and everybody wanted to see Jeff go to the IFBB and compete against Lee Haney and Rich Gaspari and Mike Christian, but it never happened. And if you heard our interview with Jeff last year, which I just put up on YouTube, by the way. If you go to my YouTube channel, I put all the pictures and video clips, so it's really cool. So check that out if you're on my YouTube channel. And Jeff talks in there about why he never went over to the IFBB, because basically they wanted to start over as an amateur, and he didn't want to take that chance because he was making so much money and he was so busy doing seminars and doing guest posings all over Europe. But he was supposed to compete in the 1985 Night of the Champions, and then they squashed it at the last minute. I don't know what happened, but they just decided not to do it. But he was in shape. He was training really hard for it. And that was the show that Albert Beckles won, and Rich Gaspari was second. So can you imagine if Jeff King in prime shape would have been in that contest? Man, what an event that would have been. But unfortunately, it never happened. Also this week, speaking of my YouTube channel, I started a new segment on there. It's called Bodybuilding History. So what I'm doing is I'm taking one contest And I'm going over that one contest for each segment of the show, of this new thing I have on YouTube. It's called Bodybuilding History. So the first one was about the 1965 Mr. Olympia, the very first Mr. Olympia. And I got some great video footage in there from Norm Komich. If you remember Norm, he was a old school bodybuilder and just a big fan of the sport. And he was actually at the 1965 and I think the 1966 Mr. Olympia contest in New York, because he was from New York and he was a teenager. And he brought his camera and he filmed it. He brought a video camera, and this is the only known footage I've ever seen of it. So I bought the video off of Norm when he was around, and this was on Iron Age back in the early 2000s, because Norm used to go on there, and he said he had this video and he was selling it. So I bought a copy of it from him, so I put some of that footage on there. So check that out on my YouTube channel. I also did another segment on bodybuilding history about the 1970 NABBA Mr. Universe, that Arnold won his third professional NABBA Universe. And Frank Zane won his first amateur Mr. Universe at that show. So that was another great event. A lot of great bodybuilders. Albert Beckles, speaking of Albert, he was in it. Franco Colombo, Chris Dickerson, Frank Richard, Boyer Coe was in it. Just a superstar lineup. And then, of course, you had Reg Park and Dave Draper against Arnold. So I put a lot of pictures in that, too. So check all that out. That's getting a lot of hits on my YouTube page. So people are really loving that. So I'm going to try and do one or two new ones a week. I'll try to do all the Mr. Olympias, and I'm going to get some of the NABBA Universes, maybe the Mr. America events. Maybe I'll go all the way back to Steve Reeves, speaking of Steve Reeves, or even John Grimmick. Obviously, I don't have a lot of pictures of that, but still talk about that. Last week, from our interview with Gerard Dente, I only got one email. I'm not sure who it's from. Hi, John. First, thank you for your amazing podcast. I am 51, and so many of these champions are my childhood heroes. Looking back, I have a great appreciation for all those guys. 10th place or first, they are all incredible. I greatly enjoyed the Mike Mentzer shows with John Little. I paid Mike for a phone consultation around 1991. He was writing, I believe, his second book at the time, and he read from his transcripts, I believe. I recorded the call, and I've never shared it, but if you would like to hear him in conversation, it's pretty cool. I have neglected to leave a review or email show comments, but I will rectify that ASAP. And then he left me a picture of himself. This is Stephen Lay is his name. And he said, this is me yesterday in my COVID home gym. And man, Stephen, you look fantastic. 51 years old, great physique, real cut, real ripped. Does not look anywhere near 51 years old. So thanks for the email, Stephen. And keep up the great work, man. You're looking awesome. I also got some comments about Gerard Dente on my Facebook page. Pete Pingle said, I remember Gerard being in all the magazines for a number of years, especially Muscular Development. And Dan Dillon, the mayor of bodybuilding, said, Gerard is still passionate and is super cool to talk to bodybuilding with at shows. And then I put the Gerard Dente interview also on my YouTube page, and I got some comments on that. Nick said, great interview. That was my era, the mid-80s, and my neck of the woods. Bodybuilding in North Jersey at that time was huge. Growing up in Bloomfield, New Jersey, Liberto's gym in Nutley was my first non-garage, non-basement gym. I trained a few times at the Olympia, eventually ended up in Viking and Gateway. I'm sure Gerard knows those gyms. Great memories. Vert Reel said, another great interview, John, but one suggestion, though, split the screen into two cams. James Lucas said, good interview and great information on how he started the supplement line before the market became so saturated. He's right to break into that environment. You have to have a unique angle, approach, or a new innovative product. Odessa File said, another great interview with a great bodybuilder. I always thought this guy was a French bodybuilder by his name, who then moved to the East Coast to compete. And I was initially surprised he did not speak with a French accent. I now see he is a New Jersey native. Dan Shetty said, I did know about him, always learning, thanks to John. The mayor of bodybuildings, again, said Gerard is a good dude, outstanding bodybuilder. I loved your 1980 Olympia show. Mike said 91 Nationals, Mendenhall fifth, unbelievable genetics and definitely juiced up. Gets beaten by Ronnie, unbelievable genetics and supposedly natty. Very interesting. And Stefano said all the gyms are closed. I've got a couple of kettlebells, four dumbbells, an easy curl bar, 50 kilos of weight, three small stools all in the lounge room, by 3 feet, and my iPad so I can look at the bodybuilding videos. I'm going to have a good workout. Wow. So, yeah, some of you guys out there are still dealing with this COVID stuff with the gyms being closed. Out here in Florida, we still got them open. And our governor said he is not going to close the gyms. But I guess this last week out in California, the governor out there closed everything. So all depends where you live. I guess the East Coast also, my friend Jose Raymond out in Massachusetts, he said his gyms have been closed since March and they have not been open. So it's really tough out there for some people. We got lucky out here in Florida because we're only closed for about, I think, 7 or 8 weeks. And everybody was complaining about that, but everything's open now. So looks like they're going to stay open. All right, that's all I got for our opening. Here is our interview with Mr. Ed Connors, one of the three owners of Gold's Gym when it was Ed, along with Pete Kromkowski and Tim Kimber. They bought it from Ken Sprague, and they really expanded Gold's Gym. And this was during the heyday of bodybuilding in the 1980s. You're going to love this interview. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me today, Mr. Ed Connors, one of the original owners of Gold's Gym with Tim Kimber and Pete Kromkowski. And Ed helped a lot of people in the bodybuilding scene. He helped them with their careers. So thanks for joining me, Ed. It's great to talk to you.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
Well, Ed, let's start at the very beginning. How did you get into bodybuilding when you were younger? What was your interest in that?
Well, I was a student in UC Berkeley in the 60s,
okay.
And I knew I was going to be drafted for Vietnam, so I joined a gym to lose weight. I'm one of those guys that I was a 250-pound fat kid, college. Yeah, wow. And I got down to 177 for the Army.
Okay, wow. What year was that?
1968. I graduated from Berkeley and went into the military.
So what gym did you join?
It was a Jack O'Lane's European Health Spa.
Okay.
In Oakland, California. And I think I was so, well, I know I was. I was so appalled at the way that they tried to sign me up. I know that in the back of my head, I must have thought, well, if I ever have a chance to change this, I will. Because, you know, it was back in the day when a membership could cost, you know, $500 to $3,000 for, you know, 3 years, 5 years, lifetime, who knows?
Okay.
It was a racket. And, you know, they'd take you into a room and you know, have a closed-circuit TV camera on you. And the manager might even call in and tell a salesperson to hurry up and close me.
Wow.
It was like buying a car. It was not pleasant. So, you know, fast forward to when Pete, Tim, and I bought the gym, and you know, we were charging $19 a month. You know, and that was it. I mean, there was no big deal or whatever you had. We pioneered daily, weekly, monthly memberships.
Okay.
And we were low cost gyms before Planet Fitness. Of course, back then $19 was equivalent probably $53-$54 in today's money.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But by comparison, it was a very cheap and good gym, because the Jack O'Lanes had things like the, you know, the wooden rollers to beat off the flat.
right.
You know, and it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday was men. Tuesday, Thursday were women. The gym was co-ed on Saturday, and it was closed on Sunday.
Wow, no kidding.
So that's it was. I don't think people now, you know, realize what a different world it was, and for many years.
Yeah. So did you end up going to Vietnam?
I did.
Did you? Okay.
22 months over there.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when you came back, you kept working out, and did you get into bodybuilding at all?
Yeah. And I took a job working for an East Coast architectural firm after the Army. And I'm an architect.
Okay.
And I got laid off in 1975. And when I went down to Orlando to interview with Disney to work on Epcot as an architect, I went over to to see a friend from the gym I trained at in Connecticut, who was at Orange Avenue Gym in Orlando, and that's where I met Pete Kromkowski.
Oh, no kidding!
So, you know, the weather in Orlando reminded me so much of Vietnam. I said, I don't care what they offer me, I'm not taking it. But when I saw Pete Kromkowski there, I said, you know, I had just come from an interview in L.A. And I went by the Gold's Gym there, and my God, you'd be the biggest guy there. You ought to come out and, you know, compete. And he said, oh, I'd love to, but I'm going through divorce. I don't even have a car. You know, I said, well, if I take that job out there, I'll fly you out. You can stay with me till you get on your feet.
Hmm.
And so Pete was, you know, my first house guest, and I've had 500 since.
Hmm.
So, you know, 3 years later, he calls me up, or what, 4 years later, and says, Ed's Gold's Gym is for sale. Are you interested? And I thought I was going to be, you know, one of dozens of shareholders. And it turned out to be just me and ultimately Tim Kimber and Pete. Hmm. So we bought the gym for, you know, $100,000 in 1979. And a year later, I opened up the first gym franchise in San Francisco, because since I'd gone to Berkeley, I knew the city.
Oh, okay.
That was the first gym franchise ever. We called it a license at the time.
So you guys bought it from Ken Sprague, right?
Right.
Okay. Wow.
Joe Gold only owned it for 5 years.
Right.
And he sold it to someone who sold it to someone who sold it to Ken Sprague.
Yeah.
But the beauty of that is, I mean, is I don't think Joe Gold would ever have allowed Butler to go come in and film Pumping Iron.
Right.
But Sprague was into the whole, you know, I think he even had his own soundstage or movie studio in Hollywood. So he understood that. And of course, that changed everybody's lives.
Yeah, I interviewed Ken and he told me all about that, how he covered up the windows and everything. And he really made it convenient for them to film.
Yeah. In fact, part of the deal was that when we bought the gym from him, since he knew I was an architect, I had to do the drawings to convert the old Gold's Gym into a legal residence.
Oh, really? Okay.
So when we bought it from Ken, he had already moved it to Santa Monica. I think he was going to make it more of a business, more of a commercial success.
Okay.
But his wife died quite suddenly, unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
His wife, trying to think of her name, Marion.
Marion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he sold. I don't think, you know, the business was losing money. It was, you know, a lot of headaches. We had Robert Blake Beretta was our landlord.
Hmm.
And he was going to jack up our rent. He was training at Don Peter's gym in the Valley.
Okay.
And I think he was jealous of, or he was trying to help Don. He didn't, you know, he didn't want to have us there. And I was also working as an architect. I kept working as an architect for the first 5 years that I owned Gold's Gym.
Oh, really?
So I led really three lives. I was a gym owner. I was an architect with a firm. And I was also consultant, an architectural consultant.
Wow. Okay.
So,
when Ken owned it and you guys bought it from him, it wasn't making money. Wasn't that considered the mecca of bodybuilding even back then?
It was, but it wasn't working as a business really back then.
Okay.
It was, I know when Pete, Tim and I, our first year, you know, we owned it most of 79. We grossed about $250,000 and I think we lost $15,000.
Hmm.
So it was, it was actually only making money because of the t-shirt sales, and then Weider pulled our ad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So that was painful. And I eventually resolved things with Joe, but no, it was basically a small business.
Hmm. Wow. So what did you guys do different, Ed?
We moved it back down to Venice in 1981.
Okay.
'81, which was our good fortune because I was working for the office of Charles Eames. Have you ever heard of the Eames chair?
No.
He's a famous American designer.
Okay.
He had just died and his wife wanted some help finishing up some architectural projects. So I was working down there in Venice at the corner of Brooks and Abbot Kinney.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a warehouse for rent down the street, which was the first bay of a 4-bay warehouse building, 6,600 square feet. So we were having problems with our landlord. I was also working on the parking structure for Frank Gehry's new shopping center in Santa Monica. So I knew the area was going to be changing. Parking would be difficult. Mm-hmm. And I said, why don't we move the gym back to Venice? So we moved it from 4,400 square feet to 6,600 square feet.
Wow.
And over time, we evolved. In 12 years, we were at 26,000.
Jeez,
so
wow.
I think our good fortune, our luck, you know, half of life, I would say, is luck.
Mm-hmm.
And because once you get it, you have to be prepared to act on it or be persistent and work hard. But we moved into that first bay, and then over time, we added, you know, because the fitness industry was evolving. There were no bikes in the gym when we bought it.
Right, right.
There was no aerobic, no cardio. So as we added each room, we added more resistance machines. We added a aerobics room. We added, 100 pieces of cardio ultimately or more.
Hmm.
So if we evolved along with the industry. So for about two or three decades, that 17,000 gym, when we were in the three bays, that was considered the ultimate gym. That was the Mecca. That was the model for hundreds of Gold's gyms.
Okay.
We had a franchise model that when we ultimately sold out was at 15,000 square feet. So that was the minimum.
Okay.
Keep in mind the Gold gym you see in Pumping Iron was only 4,200 square feet. And yet that was the Mecca. That Arnold Schwarzenegger had to go from Graz, Austria to Venice, California to train because that was the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, hard to believe now because, any place in America, any urban area, you've probably got a dozen choices, or at least before the pandemic.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy how it's changed. Yeah. So how long did you guys have it where you just owned the one bay? Because I've interviewed like Rick Valente and they talk about how it was so great in the beginning when you just had that one room and everybody was training in there.
It took us 12 years to fill out the entire building. So we probably were adding a bay every two or three years.
Okay. All right.
So that first bay probably lasted maybe 3 years, I guess.
Okay. Gotcha. So like you said, the 80s, that was really the decade for bodybuilding, right? Because that's when the fitness boom really took off and then more women started to get into it. Women's bodybuilding came along.
Well, Pete Kronkowski was dating Lisa Lyons.
Oh, was he? I didn't know that. Okay.
So she really started women's bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And we pioneered it. In fact, we insisted our gyms be co-ed, which back then was not the case. So, we actually got picketed in the South because of that. But
in the South because you guys were co-ed?
Right.
Really? Wow.
I mean, people thought the women were going to get raped in the gym. And frankly, over the years, I mean, I've personally been involved in 37 Gold's gyms. We had 704. I don't remember one case of a woman being assaulted in the gym.
Right, right.
Of course, people would say about Gold's Gym Venice, the men are men and the women are too. Some of those women are, they were bigger than a lot of middleweight bodybuilders.
Wow, yeah. What was the atmosphere like back then, Ed, in the early?
Well, it was electric, and I guess it still got some of that magic, but people would walk in there and they would tell me that they didn't really feel like working out, but when they got in there, they couldn't help it.
Right.
And Pete had his theory that, the loud music caused energy to flow from individuals and actually help them work out more. And of course, this is the day before, headphones, iPods.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different world now. So, I mean, that's one big thing that's changed is, how people listen to music in a gym.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But that was the biggest headache back then, which is hard to imagine. But I would get calls from my gym manager saying, Ed, they don't like the music we're playing. Can I, what can we do? And we would have to have different radio stations at different times of the day to satisfy the different, moods during
in
a typical gym of a day. Yeah.
Huh. Now, had Joe Gold open up World's Gym down the street from you guys at that time?
Well, not right away. I mean, when he sold in 1970, he went back to the sea. And I think then he came back into L.A. and he regretted selling his gym, although not to us, obviously, because wasn't the case. But he opened up a World Gym on Main Street in Santa Monica. And he kept it more like a private club. I mean, when he died in 2004, we had he had 600 members. When we sold in 2004, we had 12,000.
Wow.
So his business could not have survived unless he had the franchise income coming in.
Yeah, yeah.
So he copied us. I mean, and actually he kept his fees pretty much the same. And we tried to meet regularly for lunch to talk about, which owner our owners. Because if we would not renew someone for whatever reason, they might then try to become a World Gym or vice versa. So there was always this back and forth as to, who were who are the people you might want to have join versus not continue with your name.
Oh, okay. Were there a lot of big bodybuilders that went to both gyms that would go to World?
Yeah, there were quite a few. Lee Priest, even though Lee was a house guest for his first 5 months in America, I think he was having trouble with some people in Gold's Gym Venice, so he went over to World Gym for a while. Lou Ferrigno went back and forth.
Yeah.
He was kind of I didn't mind that. I mean, you can get stale, you get bored. I would say a lot of our members had two or three memberships at different clubs.
Mm-hmm.
That was the time when people did that. No, I completely, and you've got to make the gym convenient. I mean, we were both close to each other. There was a powerhouse there too at one point. But Arnold was loyal to Joe Gold because that's where he first came. But we had good relationship with Arnold and Maria, and he would poke his head in the gym a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, he's keeping it alive now because he trains there.
Right.
And if it weren't for him, I think Google would have taken over the building already.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah. Huh.
What'd you think of Joe Gold? When you got to meet?
Well, I tell people if you looked up the word curmudgeon in the dictionary, there would be a picture of him.
Right.
He apparently had injured his back in Korea, so he was in a lot of pain.
Mm, okay. Yeah, he was real an old school bodybuilder, kind of like Vince Gironda too, right?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, he was a nice guy, but very opinionated, strong opinions, and
yeah.
Well, a good example is I ran into we would go to Arnold's restaurant a lot for business lunches. It was called Chotsey's.
Uh huh.
It was in the building he owned on Main Street. And one day, there was a period, 1991, 92, when Arnold owned a World Gym for 2 years. And he said to me, Ed, how come your gym is so busy and mine is empty? Or not empty, but not so busy.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's a stereo system. And Joe Gold thought I was joking. Arnold laughed. But, Joe Gold would not allow any music in the gym.
Right.
So it was like a church. And so, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm very self-conscious when I drop a weight or make noise.
Yeah.
So having that music to mash that is something I like, and I think a lot of people do. So, that was a big difference. It was like a church in there, or
That's what I heard. It was like it depended on what kind of personality you had. Like Mike Christian, he wanted more the rock and roll, and he wanted more the high energy, so he would go to Gold's. Or other guys would go to Worlds, depended on, what kind of personality you had, what kind of atmosphere you wanted.
Yeah, I think the old timers especially went to the World Gym.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The people that Arnold knew too, and he would have been, unfortunately, he would have probably been, bothered too much at Gold's because the tourists came, and Joe Gold wouldn't allow any of that.
Right, right. Were you a big bodybuilding fan, Ed, when you were younger?
Yeah, I was. I think Superman was the hero back then. Hercules, Steve Reeves.
Yeah.
So I saw this as, the ideal body. I mean, I was not an athlete. I was an overweight kid. But mm-hmm. I admired that look. And my dad was a surgeon, and my brothers are doctors. And so I was fascinated with, that athleticism.
Okay.
Health and fitness.
Yeah.
And then I realized, and I guess I was always looking for the next Arnold.
Yeah.
To help somebody who would achieve, that level of fame. And John Cena was one of my house guests. I discovered him in the Gold Gym parking lot. So he's probably the one who's come closest to kind of achieving that fantasy I had of discovering talent.
Yeah.
And he's influenced a lot of people in and out of the fitness world.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a great role model, but he was out on spring break to see an ex-girlfriend and I think he was sleeping in his car, but I saw him. And at the time in the gym, Marky Mark Wahlberg now, was training there along with Matt Damon, and John Cena looked like Matt Damon with muscles. Or big
he did,
arms.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't. People wonder what I see, but I to me, it was so obvious. So I approached him in the parking lot, and you know, I scare a lot of people, or they blow me off. And I said, "Have you ever thought about professional wrestling?" And he said it would be his dream. And I gave him my car. We communicate. Went back to Massachusetts to finish college, and he came out after he graduated. Stayed with me for his first 5 months and got his feet on the ground and went to wrestling school. 18 months later, he had a contract with WWE or WWF at the time. So I've gotten like 24 guys into wrestling after Vince McMahon tried to buy us in the early 80s.
Okay.
So I got to know him. Ultimate Warrior was another house guest, Jim
okay.
Elway.
Okay.
Sting, wrestler Sting.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle, not all of them, achieved John's fame, but Ultimate Warrior certainly inspired a lot of people, and John, and then the bodybuilding world, the magazines were the social media of the day, so I would have these, I would have house guests who would then shoot in the gym wearing our clothing. So back then, a full-page color ad in Wiener's magazine would cost $35,000. But you could pick up an issue of Muscle and Fitness, Muscle Builder, Muscle Mag, and you would see all these pages with shot in Gold's Gym because we had our name over the mirrors.
Right, right.
A very, very easy trick. You can't take a photo in Gold's Gym Venice without knowing where you are.
Right.
So that was all free advertising. So I feel it was all my house guests and the people we gave memberships to that helped make Gold's Gym the Mecca and famous and the biggest gym chain in the world. Because we spent very little on marketing. But we gave away, I'd say, on average, $70,000 a month in free memberships or clothing.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
So that was the grassroots marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
Our accountant made us keep track of what we gave away for tax purposes. So we went from $60,000 to $80,000 a month in freebies.
Wow. Unbelievable. So now when you talk about these, how big was your house? First of all, Ed, you said,
I had three at one point, both.
Okay.
Yeah. And, my last one on the beach was about, 4,700 square feet.
Okay.
I had four bedrooms and they were usually filled. And back in the '80s and early 90s, there weren't gurus.
Yeah.
So my house was kind of a guru house. So, Jay Cutler might be there with a couple other guys and they would exchange. Some of them might be from Europe. So they would exchange ideas on, what are you taking supplement wise? How are you eating? What are you training?
Yeah.
And they would learn from each other. And when you're staying under the same roof, you can't hide a lot.
Yeah, right.
Someone like Jay was very flexible. He'd come down the stairs and say, "Who wants to train legs today?" And, someone would say, "Well, I don't want to do it. How about arms?" And they, "Oh yeah, sure." And then go down to the gym. And all three of my homes were within walking distance to the gym.
Wow. So
you didn't need a car. I mean, it wasn't, LA is really a lot of different communities. And Venice is, 100,000 people. My last home was maybe 3/4 of a mile from the gym. My first one, which I had for 11 years, was two blocks from the gym. So it was a hop, skip, and a jump. And the biggest trip peak guys would make for the week would, go 7 blocks to the grocery store.
Wow.
And the beach was right in front.
So when you had these house guests, you would just approach these guys who you thought had potential and just say, "Why don't you come to California?" It's like they didn't live in California. Just say, "Come to California. I got a house for you." And they would stay rent-free. And would they stay as long as they want?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, sometimes I overbooked or someone, so there were a few times where I didn't really have the room. But I would see people would come out. The Gold's Gyms back then ran a lot of Gold's Classic competitions.
Yeah.
And the winners would come out to the Mecca to be photographed. And if they had potential or something, I'd say, you want. And Jay Cutler was an example of this where, he said it wasn't the first when he came out the first time with Carrie, his fiance. I said, "Well, I saw him being photographed in the gym," and I said, "My God, you the gray, where you're staying. He named this motel on Pico, which was really a bad area at the time. And I said, well, you're not staying there. You and Carrie can stay at my place. And he said it was when I invited him back later on that year, that he decided to pursue bodybuilding as a career.
Wow.
So, someone like Lee Priest, Lee was stranded. He was invited to California by Lou Zwick, who somehow left him stranded in Venice. And Irv Gelb, the photographer, brought him over to my office and said, hey, look at this kid. And I took Polaroids and FedExed him to Weider. And 2 days later, we had lunch with Joe. We offered him a contract, but it took months to get going. Mm-hmm. So during the first five months that Lee Priest was in America, he stayed at my house. And there were other house guests at the time. Some fun stories.
Now, how old was Lee at the time when he?
He turned 21 in my house.
Turned 21, wow.
I remember that because I bought him an ice cream cake.
So he obviously had great potential back then. You could see, you know, this kid.
Well, yeah, and Jay Cutler did an interview recently with me, and I don't normally say this, but I admitted to Jay, and thank God he agreed. He said, you know, Ed, who's the most incredible bodybuilder you've ever met? And I had to say Lee Priest.
Wow, is that good?
Because at 20, at age 21, he was he was incredible. I mean, it's perfect, except for, you know, if he'd been 2 inches taller, I think he'd be yeah. Mr. Olympia. He's 5'3", and you know, if his legs had been a little bit longer, who knows? But
yeah,
but he had a mind-boggling physique. He had 21.5-inch biceps.
Jeez, unbelievable.
And 20 inches, being an architect, I've taped a lot of the guys.
Inches is
a huge hurdle.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Now, how about Jay when you saw him? How old was he?
He was 19 or 20.
Wow. Really? Okay.
Yeah, a lot of the guys were 19. I don't know how I met them so young and even back then, I mean, there was no internet.
Right.
No cell phones. It's amazing. I met as many people as I did found as many people. It's just, I can't explain it.
So what would you look for, Ed? Would you just look for basically a young guy who you could see had the genetic potential? Like you said, you saw John Cena in a parking lot. Did you see him because he looked like Matt Damon and he looked like he had a good physique?
Yeah, Lex Luger and Sting were partners in a gym in Atlanta, a Gold's Gym.
Okay.
And you know, they had a telegenic look, great for TV. Mm-hmm. And so I was very much aware of Lex Luger's face and Matt Damon, Mark Wahlberg, and John had what I would call a telegenic face, just a great looking face. I mean, veer here from, actually it's been harder for me to find, you know, male fitness models like a Mike O'Hearn or Greg Plitt mm-hmm. than it's been to find a pro bodybuilder or pro wrestler.
Hmm.
So having that face, that marketability, is just something that, you know, you see and you, I guess living in LA with the movie stars and all that, you're kind of attuned to, you know, what is it that makes that person a star?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Some of the guys, for instance, like Greg Plitt, who's now, God rest his soul.
Right.
He photographed better than he looked in person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some of the guys, most of the guys, you know, look great when they get photographed, but others who you aren't sure of look a lot better on film than they do in person.
Yeah. That's
But John just had a great look, and you know he was a natural bodybuilder and still is, but he had big arms, and he was only 6 feet, which, you know, typically the WWE wants guys that are at least 6'2" or 6'3".
Mm-hmm.
But back then they weren't quite so critical, and he, you know, he proved himself. He knew how to work the crowd. I mean, he's a great. He may not be the greatest wrestler ever, but he certainly knows how to. He's the greatest professional wrestler.
Yeah. He's having a great acting career too.
Yeah, he's done great in the. I loved him in the Marine, and I liked his comedy bits in the various films he's been in. And
yeah, his comedy.
I think he's coming out in the new Fast and Furious.
Oh, is he? Oh, he'd be perfect for that. Yeah.
So yeah, I know he's. I guess if you can get in front of 15,000 people every night and perform, you can act.
Right.
So, yeah, he's, again, a lot of my house guests really surprised me. Like, I mean, at least seven of them have gone on to start supplement companies.
Wow, really? Yeah, one guy I recently talked to was Rich Gaspari, and I just texted Rich this morning, and I told him I was interviewing you, and he's like, wow, he helped me out so much. So now, Rich, did you see him at Gold's? Because I know he took fifth at the Nationals, right? And then you
went. No, yeah, well, I kind of remember meeting him in San Jose at a contest.
At the Nationals, yeah.
And he had, like so many guys who are short, he was kind of in denial and wanted to compete as a heavyweight. There was no super heavy then.
Right.
And I said, Rich, if you go down a class, you'll probably win and get your pro card. And by the way, if you want to come out and work one of my gyms in Southern California, you're welcome to.
Yeah.
And I think he was just 19 or 20. And so he ended up working at my gym in the Valley in Reseda. And that's where he met Lee Haney and Bertel Fox and a few other people.
Right.
My Sting, the Steve Borden, was my manager for that gym.
Oh, really? Okay.
So he was not the best employee. He's pretty Italian or pretty high strung.
Yeah.
He should tell you some stories of things he did while working in the gym. But, you know, he totally blew me away by starting his own supplement company, which I failed many times with Gold's Gym. We tried a half a dozen times to get supplement company going and weren't so successful.
Wow.
But, you know, Rich has done it a couple times. So, yeah, he really amazed me. But, yeah, he came out to California. He probably stayed with me for a little bit and then lived in the Valley, you know, 17 miles away from Venice. So he had to move up there to work.
Okay.
But yeah, I gave him, you know, some good advice, I guess. I've done that to others over the years. Jeff Long tried to get him to go, you know, down a weight class.
Okay.
Yeah, there are so many that, you know, were kind of shooting for the moon. And I said, well, you know, get your pro card first and then add the weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about Rich, you just mentioned luck. I remember reading the story about him. He was in the Nationals in San Jose. He was like 20 years old and he was a heavyweight, like you said. And remember that Jeff Williams, I think, who was being promoted in Weeders magazine, he was a big guy. Mm-hmm. And I think he thought he was going to win. And then after the prejudging, he knew he wasn't going to win. It was going to be between Rory Liedemeyer and Bob Pierce. So he didn't come back to the finals, and Rich was in sixth place, and then he got moved up to fifth. And if that wouldn't have happened, maybe you wouldn't have noticed him, you know, because he was in the top five. And then, you know, you brought him out to California, and his whole life changed. Plus, you gave him that great advice to go down to light heavyweight.
Well, but it's funny. I mean, I can go to a contest, and sometimes the most interesting person I'll meet will be in the audience.
Really? Wow.
Like Matt Mendenhall. I mean, I remember walking down the aisle at some contest, and I saw these calves sticking out. and I approached him, and then I brought him and his wife out to California. So, I probably would have noticed him. Well, Paulo Amedo, do you know Paulo?
No.
He was working with Rich Piana for a while.
Okay.
Paulo, when the first contest I saw him in, he was ninth, but he was incredible. I mean, yeah, look him up. Paulo, okay. He's now retired, but incredible bodybuilder. Yeah.
So it's just, you could see the genetic potential when you see these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a combination of the looks and the physique.
Right.
Yeah.
Genetics is only 5% of it, but if you don't have that, forget it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's, you know, for what the bodybuilding or the fitness world wants, you have to have that extra 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of sad because I know how hard some of these guys work, but
yeah,
they just don't have it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I mean, maybe I judge too quickly, but there's so much work involved. I don't think you can look at this as a hobby.
Right.
And right now I don't even know where bodybuilding is going. So the only people I encourage now are in the bodybuilding world are the ones that are 5'5" or under that I think will potentially be able to make some money in the 212 class.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I brought Flex Lewis to American 04, and he's been the 212 winner for 6 years in a row. Derek Lunsford is someone I encouraged, and then Michael Cleaves, who just won, got his pro card last year. He's only 5'4", so he could be a real threat in the 212 class.
So why is that, Ed? Why are you encouraging the shorter guys for the 212?
Well, because I just think a lot of Americans can relate to that. You don't have to get to 300.
Yeah.
And at 5'5", 5'4", 212 pounds on that frame is a good look, or pretty damn impressive.
Right.
I think more Americans could relate, or were more attracted to the 212 lineup in last year's Olympia than the open class.
Yeah.
It's just my opinion, but.
What do you think about this classic physique? Do you think that's a good division to head in?
Yeah, I think that could be the future. Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
I think maybe the bodybuilding will die like the women's, and the classic shorts will get shorter, and we'll be back to where we were.
Yeah.
40
almost,
years
it
ago.
It almost seems like it's going that way, doesn't it?
I hate to say it does to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone like Chris Bumstead or Mac Robinson are just amazing physiques for their height and weight. So again, it's about creating that illusion.
Yeah.
That's that genetic quality where you could be. I mean, you know, Chris Bumstead is now well known, but I mean, look at that physique, and you'd swear he has to weigh 25, 30 pounds more than he does.
Mm-hmm.
So he can pull it off. It's a great look. It's like a Michael Hearn in the early days.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you guys bought golds in the early 80s, you saw bodybuilding back then. And that's really my favorite era, you know, going back to all the eras of bodybuilding. I like the 80s the best.
Right.
Because the physiques were more advanced than the 70s. But they looked attainable. And I think that was more inspiring for someone getting into the sport. If you saw the magazines and you saw guys who looked like they had physiques that you could get if you really worked hard, you know.
Well, you used a good word there, attainable.
Yeah.
And I think that's what America wants now. I mean, I'm working on a new gym prototype because, you know, the millennials are different. The people that made Gold's Gym the mecca and the biggest gym chain in the world back in the 80s and early 90s, they don't exist in any numbers now.
Right.
So the millennials want something different.
Right.
But I'm fascinated because I'll be with big bodybuilders and they'll come up to them, and I see a whole different attitude than I saw back in the 80s. In other words, back then they were freaks, but now they're, you know, these people look at them like, oh my God, well, that's pretty incredible. You know, you could maybe teach me something. So in other words, they don't necessarily want to train or eat like they do to look the way they do, but they do respect them for what they may know about, you know, their health,
right,
and fitness. So there are some pluses out there.
Yeah. Do you think the drug usage just got too crazy yet? Do you think
went wrong? I mean, I think growth hormone started around 94.
Right.
So in the 80s, there was no growth hormone. There was no insulin.
Right.
Part of that time, you know, steroids were legal. And I knew what the guys were doing. There were doctors that they could go to in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing. And they would go on for a few months and they would get off, and their chemistry levels would go back to close to where they were.
Right.
I mean, it was a safe and sane time. It was a simpler, more innocent world, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, and it just, the physiques look so much better, and I think it was because, you know, the drugs just got out of hand. Like you said, with the growth hormone, then insulin came in, then they started doing the synthol.
Yeah.
And it just,
well, I've had, I don't know, I, after 40 years, I can't honestly say I know anyone who was killed or died because of steroids.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely a problem with enlarged hearts from growth hormone.
Yes.
And I would say synthol may have killed at least 6 people I know that were house guests.
Wow.
Nasser El-Sambadi for sure.
Really? You think so? Yeah.
Maybe Scott Klein, Matt Duvall, there were, Ed Van Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was present when one of the doctors came out from one of the guys that had just died, and he said, you know, I said, how did he die? What did he die from? And the doctor said, synthol poisoning. He said, you can't, blood poisoning. He said, you can't inject impure fluids in your body and not expect trouble.
Right.
So my message would be, don't, I mean, that's not bodybuilding.
Synthol. No, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, that's really sick. I mean, you know, Matt Duvall, God bless him. I mean, he had 22-inch biceps. He didn't need 23s.
Yeah.
To me, it looks fake. They've got this body dysmorphia. They can't see it, but
right.
I think it's ugly. It's ridiculous. It'd be like the women with the breast implants where you fake calves and pecs and
right.
It's out of hand. I mean, that's nuts. That's not
another problem is with the judging. I mean, if the judges aren't, getting hard on these guys for doing that, they're just going to keep doing it, And I think even like when they started getting bigger, it was like the judges encouraged that, and then it just went crazy.
I'm glad you said that because that's why I kind of respected Wayne D'Amelio because he left the organization because he wouldn't place people high who obviously had Synthol.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was the British bodybuilder that had it in his arm?
Ernie Taylor.
Ernie Taylor, yeah. And he came to see me, and I said, I can't recommend you to Weider because you've got fake arms. And he got all upset, it looked fake to me. And
yeah,
but he placed fifth, I think, in the Olympia.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you can't reward that, I don't think.
And when you started Golds in the early 80s, the general public didn't really know much about steroids, right? I mean, the mass media and stuff, it was kind of a secret.
They were legal.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of, black market, but it was all legal. It was all real stuff. People would look at bodybuilders and you'd hear people mumble steroids. But,
yeah.
I mean, you and I know if it's just a matter of injecting yourself or taking a pill, we'd all look, crazy.
Right. Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of dieting and training. I think steroids have gotten a bad name. In fact, they've saved, even supplements. I mean, remember there was kind of a witch hunt going on against creatine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I mean, that Bill Phillips was the inventor of that is for supplements. And I think he saved a lot of lives because, that program 2020 called the gym. They wanted to do an expose on wrestling deaths,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to blame creatine. because that year, like three or four people, wrestlers had died. And I said, they probably died because they were dehydrated. They ran around the building in the rubber suits. Cause we've seen this with bodybuilders.
Sure.
And I said, if anything, creatine probably saved their lives because it retained water in their bodies, and they didn't die from hydration.
Yeah.
And so they ended up changing the entire program, and I think the NCAA for two or three years after that allowed wrestlers to weigh in, I don't know, 6-7 pounds overweight.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. So okay. I really feel that was one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah. Really. Wow.
Because creatine. Is a miracle product.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed to me like the turning point was that 1988 Olympics when Ben Johnson failed for steroids, and it seemed like that's when the floodgates opened up and everybody knew about steroids. So if you see these guys today who are 280, 300 pounds, obviously even a kid is going to know they're taking a bunch of steroids to look like that. It's a lot of drugs, and I think that ruins the appeal of bodybuilding compared to how it was in the 80s.
Right. And part of it's the fault of the drug companies, I think, or our government. If you're going to tell people they're bad, don't lie to them. Tell them the truth. Do the studies.
Right. Right.
It's like when you open up the steroid box and look at the paper, it says, warning, this does not enhance athletic ability.
Right.
This will cause, sterility or impotence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know one bodybuilder for whom that's true.
Right. Exactly.
So, in fact, that's an issue because guys were taking, steroids thinking they couldn't get their girlfriends pregnant, otherwise pregnant. And lo and behold, they've got a baby on the way.
Yeah.
So, I don't have a lot of respect for the drug companies on that issue.
Yeah. You helped Mike Matarazzo also, right?
Didn't
you?
Yeah, Mike was one of my favorites, and it was a wonderful story because he was again stranded out in L.A. by Lou Zwick, and Paul DeMeo had told him if ever he was needed help to go to my office or see Ed Connors. So I remember he knocked on my door one day, and I thought he was, I actually was giving memberships to the local college football team.
Okay.
And I thought he was a football player and still had on his pads.
Oh, really?
So he walked in my office and I said, well, you don't need to wear your pads to impress me. And he says, those aren't pads. So I said, well, take off your shirt and hit a double bicep. And, you know, he had probably, I don't know, 21, 22 inch arms. At 5'10 and 265. And I said, well, you're not leaving here until you turn pro. And he said, well, you better talk to my parents. So I flew back to Boston to have an incredible Easter feast with his Italian parents.
Oh, really? No kidding.
To talk to them about letting their son come out and train for the Mr. USA in Santa Monica in July.
Yeah.
So at the same time in my house, Achim Albrecht, the pro bodybuilder from Germany,
yeah.
He was staying there too. So Mike and Achim trained together for those 5 months, and I think both of them have great memories of that period.
Wow, that's amazing.
Achim's English wasn't that great, but you know, the combination of having, you know, a buddy like that to train with a different perspective, a European perspective.
Right.
It was, you know, Mike always remembers that as one of the greatest 5 months of his life.
Wow. So you had to go back to Boston and talk to his parents to let him come out.
Yeah. I mean, it's the sad thing, I guess. I mean, I'm working on my book. I've had 503 house guests that I can document.
Wow. That's going to be a great book.
And I've only talked to the parents of about a dozen.
Hmm.
But I would say Frank McGrath and Mike Matarazzo had the most loving parents that cared.
Really?
Like, who is this strange old man their son's going to go out and stay with?
Yeah.
And, you know, they grilled me. And but, no, I was there. Mike's parents and his sister were there in Santa Monica when he won, and it was one of the greatest moments of my life.
Oh, man.
His
great.
Dad reached up and hugged me, and, you know, it was just it was something I'll never forget.
Yeah. Yeah, he seemed like such a great guy, and I met him a few times, and like you said, he came.
He had a lot of personal, but he had the genetic. I mean, he never trained his calves. He had 22-inch calves.
Right, right.
He and Mike Francois and Paul DeMeo all had 22-inch calves, the biggest I've ever taped.
Jeez.
So the average pro on stage would be 18 or 19 inches.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy.
Yeah, but his parents were Sicilian and Southern Italy, and they climbed mountains. You know, I've been there.
Mm.
And his mom and dad both had big legs, and he got that's your genetics.
Yeah, yeah. Did a lot of people look at you like, who is this guy, when you approached them?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, yeah. I would say the majority of people blew me off.
Really? Wow, yeah. What a mistake, huh?
And it's harder now, actually. When I meet someone online or social media, I'll say, you know, are you interested in, you know, professional wrestling? And, you know, they pretty much F you, you know, and... So no, it's it's a strange. It's harder now than it was back then, and it's kind of sad in a way. But yeah, but again, it's a different world. You know?
Yeah,
I think totally change different. Is the one constant.
Yeah. Any other guys that you can think of who came out?
Well, you're going to be interviewing Gerard Dente.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And he was tremendous, and has his own supplement company, and that's
right.
Quite a surprise.
Right.
PJ Braun has his own company now.
Yeah.
There's a half a dozen there. Some people wouldn't know because of their brands, but that was a surprise. Dallas McCarver or Nick Trigilli.
Yeah.
My last major pro bodybuilders.
Okay.
Yeah, Dallas is, you know, I really miss him and Rich Piana.
Mm-hmm.
They died within a few weeks of each other. But, Dallas was, you know, great, great physique. I think, again, just got a little bit too obsessed with the weight and size.
Right, right.
And, I'm trying to think of, well, there's so many in there. Paul DeMeo was... so gifted, and I'm sure Gunther Schlierkamp was great.
Yeah.
He learned, he stayed in my house for 5 months with his second wife and learned English, and he never won the Mr. Olympia, but, you know, he was very popular and had a great career. And
yeah.
I think that's something I tell the guys when they get their pro cards. It's not all about winning.
Yeah.
It's about having a long, successful career. He was wonderful. A lot of German house guests, Roman Fritz, mm-hmm. great guy, mm-hmm. Daniel Hill, Marcus Rule, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the key with the foreign house guests is a lot of them didn't speak English.
Oh, really?
So as arrogant as it sounds, you really got to learn English to be successful in bodybuilding.
Yeah, right. Hey, talk a little bit about the gym atmosphere, because you guys probably had the best atmosphere of any gym in the country when Gold's was in its heyday. And, you know, I was working out of gyms in the 1980s in Chicago, and they were small, hardcore gyms. Yeah. And nowadays, I look around at the gym when I'm training, and it's like everybody's on their phones. And,
yeah.
You know, it's such a different atmosphere. It's really changed a lot, hasn't it, since then?
Yeah, I don't think it's good.
Me neither.
You know, you're right about people being on their phones, and I don't know what we would have done at Gold's with you know, people taking pictures all the time and
yeah,
you know, people, because a lot of movie stars train there and they want their privacy.
Yeah.
So that would have been a big issue. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's just everybody was doing their thing and helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I hate to hear are people say to me, oh yeah, you sell memberships hoping they'll never show up. And if you can imagine, I mean, we had several thousand people a day go through Gold's Venice. We had 12,000 members when we sold in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever remember. The only person who ever complained about the gym being too crowded was one of the Barbarian brothers.
Really?
You know, and they could have trained anytime they wanted. So it was all those people working out that gave it that energy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the music, the noise, and you know, we were fortunately didn't need air conditioning or heat. So, you know, you're open to the sea breezes and you're in the, yeah. you know, the you know, the LA sunlight.
Yeah.
Which is kind of magical in itself. So it was just a happening place, and you know, people met people and networked. I mean, people would say, "Oh yeah, Ed, you know, your gym isn't the place you go to meet people," but all of my employees met their spouses in the gym.
Oh, really? Wow.
So it wasn't, you know, it was a meeting place, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the kind of social place that you think of. It was, you know, you had to go and do your thing. And, you know, and then private training started. So that personal training. So that was a whole nother, added a whole nother layer of seriousness to it, or people getting results.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it seems like with the bodybuilders too, it's changed as far as how to make a career out of this, right? Because back then we had the magazines. The magazines were a big place to get your publicity, and right. Now it's all social media now, so it's right. A different ballgame.
Yeah.
And before it seemed like you had to be a champion in order to be in the magazine. So if you made it to the magazines, you were someone who was established. Where now today anybody can be on social media, so anybody can promote themselves.
Well, there were really only three ways to get a pro card back then. I mean, there were, you know, three pro cards for the men in a year, right?
Right, right.
And now it's hundreds.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's completely different. But, you know, the people would say, well, there's no money in bodybuilding. But, you know, now there are hundreds of thousands of men and women worldwide making a living as personal trainers.
Mm-hmm.
So ironically, there is actually more money in it
than
ever.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of guys training and gals training people online making six-figure income.
Yeah, yeah.
And many never even seeing their clients, which totally mystifies me, but it's working for some, yeah.
Right.
So I'm actually very happy with that, because it made the gym, I think, a safer, better place. People would get results, and so they would keep their membership going longer.
Yeah, true. What do you think about the way the gyms are being run now? I heard you on Dave's show, and you were talking about how Gold's is, you know, it's corporate owned, and they're not really running it like you guys would run it. Do you do any consulting for other gyms?
I've done a little bit. Actually, I haven't talked to the Gold's gym owners in 16 years.
Really? Wow.
But I get calls maybe once a week from somebody wanting to do a gym and asking for some advice, mainly. Yeah. Mainly the smaller personal training gyms, which actually they may be the one type, the 3,000 to 8,000 square foot gyms that they may survive this pandemic better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And my new business model, my concept is under 10,000 square feet.
Really? Okay.
So, yeah, I think the gyms have gotten too big and they're not going to do well in terms of the cleaning and the social distancing.
Yeah.
At least till we get a vaccine.
Yeah, but this may happen again, right, Ed? I mean, we may get another super virus coming in another
right.
year. You never know, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you've seen one virus, you haven't seen them all. I mean, they're all,
yeah.
each one, you know, the Marburg virus, the swine flu, bird flu, Spanish flu, they've each been different.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, this one is not as deadly as the others. The other ones were so deadly that they basically, spent themselves out, or
mm-hmm.
They killed their host so thoroughly, so completely, they couldn't spread, they couldn't jump to another host.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But this one is incredibly, and I don't know what to believe or understand, because there's no rhyme or reason to what's happening, it seems. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
But, you know, it reminds me a little bit of, you know, I opened my first gym in San Francisco. I'd gone to Berkeley, and I knew a gym that was for sale in San Francisco. And this was the start of AIDS. I opened up my first gym in 1980, and that's when AIDS began.
Right.
And do you know how many people have been killed by AIDS in the last 40 years?
No.
Take a guess.
4 million.
33 million.
33 million, okay.
And 40 million people are living with it. And I remember then I was talking to a couple of my former employees, their partners, and they said that they reminded me of the myths surrounding how you could get AIDS and all that they had to do to keep the gym clean.
Right.
And a lot of people thought that might be the death of the gym business.
Hmm. Wow.
And of course, you know, the gyms went on to thrive after that. And actually, you know, good health may become more important than ever. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'd like to see current statistics, but I think the last time I heard, 42% of the people who died in New York were in bad health, were mm-hmm. in nursing homes or mm-hmm. overweight or had diabetes. So maybe if you're healthy, you know, you will survive this. Unlike, say, the Spanish flu, which apparently focused on young people.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I just wonder what the impact's going to be as far as how we interact, you know, because it's gone on for so long now. Now it's coming back. The numbers are going back up.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, are people going to be, you know, more standoffish and, you know, you can't touch each other and you got to stay apart from each other?
I think the media has created such hysteria.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That people are going to be more standoffish. Again, and I'm not saying it was a conspiracy of the media. It's just that, and that's all they have. That's all the kind of stories they do. So in the mind of the public, that's this overwhelming issue.
Yeah.
But I mean, you look at it right now, only 1% of Americans have been infected. We're at 3 million in a population of 330 million.
Mm-hmm.
And 95.6% of those have survived.
Yeah. Right.
So the odds of dying are pretty small.
Yeah. So, Ed, you said you're working on a book. When will the book be out?
You know, I don't know. My publishers, the last feedback I got wasn't that encouraging. I need it's very hard to write a book.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of work, but it's been kind of a good project to do in this quarantine period.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of memories, but because I don't think people realize how much the industry has changed. And
oh yeah,
I want to get that down on paper.
Yeah,
and some of the history of Gold's Gym and my house guests and bodybuilding and
yeah,
stuff just, like that. Yeah,
just the house guest alone, I think, would make for a great book.
Yeah, yeah. You should ask Gerard what stories he remembers from.
Okay.
who was at the house with him? John Cena remembers 8 other house guests, but I've only been able to find one.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the longest anyone stayed in your house? Did you have to kick them out?
Well, yeah. Frank McGrath stayed at 4 different houses of mine for a total of 2 years.
Okay.
I didn't really kick him out, but he left my last house to go back to Canada. And then, do you remember Joe Millionaire, Evan Marriott?
No. Mm-hmm.
He became a star the first really reality TV show. It's called Joe Millionaire.
Okay.
He was a 6'5" bodybuilder that I was trying to encourage to get into wrestling. And while he was staying in my house, I said, why don't you go on these cattle calls, these casting calls? And he got interviewed for this new TV show. He beat out 2,000 others.
Okay.
I think my interview helped. Again, he had a great look.
Yeah.
So he ended up staying in some of my houses for almost 2 years. So it was pretty surreal being with him in the bedroom he was staying in, watching him on TV with 43 million other people.
Wow.
The last episode of Joe Millionaire.
What's he doing now?
He's a contractor in Orange County.
Okay. Wow. That's wild.
I was hoping he would stay in the movie business or acting, but he didn't like it, I guess.
Oh, really? Okay.
I really think a lot of guys who are good looking, you know, pretty boys.
Yeah.
I think they have trouble living with it or dealing with it.
Dealing with it, that they're good looking?
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
I'll send you some pictures of Evan and you'll maybe see what I mean.
Okay.
But, no, it's I guess a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. When you look at these movie stars like, Brad Pitt or Matt Damon, we've been talking about, and you see them off camera, and you can almost see that they're not really maybe liking that look that people love. And I guess that's what I would encourage people. I mean, I look at, you know, what bodybuilders have, that to me is a talent given them by God, like their face, their physique, their whole package.
Right, right.
So if you're given this gift, I think you have an obligation to use it to, I mean, mine was to be an architect and gym owner, I think, and I'm taking it, I guess, to the max, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, sure. I was privileged to work on some, you know, nice buildings. I'm proud of what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I still think I'm a good architect, but, and actually architecture played a big role in, you know, my time with Gold's Gym. I reviewed hundreds of plans. I designed the Gold's Gym Venice. I mean, as Mickey Mouse as it is, it wasn't much, but it lasted. It's lasted for a long time. 40 years almost.
Are you still working as an architect?
I'm doing some things. Yes, I mean, I worked on this new prototype, and it's all, you know, I'm using my architectural skills for sure. Yes.
What are you going to do with that prototype? Are you going to try to sell it to people who are interested?
Yeah, I'm trying to get financing right now. And thanks to these interviews, these podcasts I've done with Dave and you and others, I've gotten some interest.
Okay. All right, good luck with that.
So, it would be fun to start another gym chain before I die.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, you definitely got the knowledge and the experience, so we could all benefit from that for sure. Yeah.
I'll send you my pitch deck.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah. That's what they call a PowerPoint presentation nowadays.
Pitch deck? Okay.
Pitch deck, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll send that to you. Yeah, it'll be now that I've got your email.
All right. Sounds good.
Good.
All right, Ed. Well, I'll let you go. I just want to thank you for joining us on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I know you're a man of wealth and knowledge, so I wanted to get some of your stories. And if you think of any more good house guest stories, maybe we can have you back on for part two.
I'll send you a list, and you can tell me who you might talk to there, then it will jog my memory, and we can something. We could do a Zoom call with 3 or 4 people.
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Take care.
All right, Ed. Thank you very much.
Have a great week.
All right, okay. You too, buddy. Take care. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Ed Connors for that great interview. And I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine for continuing to sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I also want to thank all our Patreon donors who continue to support our show. I really appreciate you guys. If you're interested in helping to support the podcast, you can just go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is the official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon, and you can contribute as little as $5 a month if you so choose. Thank you to all you guys who are doing that. I really do appreciate it. All right, next week we are going to have an interview with, get this, Dave McVeigh. Now, Dave was a writer, and he's a film editor, and Dave was the one who edited the documentary Raw Iron, which was shown with the 25th anniversary of Pumping Iron. So Dave got a chance to see all 100 hours of footage of the original Pumping Iron movie. So we're going to have an interview with Dave about what he saw
and what it was like to work with Arnold Schwarzenegger to put together this documentary, Raw Iron, which came out, I believe, in 2003, the 25th anniversary of the movie Pumping Iron. So that's going to be a really interesting interview, and that'll be next week here on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right, that's it. Hope you guys have a great week. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week. Take care.